Our fourth case for argument this morning is United States against Thurman. Mr. Cronin.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Dan Cronin. I'm an assistant federal public defender, and I'm here on behalf of Antoine Thurman. Antoine Thurman pled guilty to a four-count indictment alleging drug offenses. A PSR was prepared. No objections were filed in response to it. And at sentencing, there was no evidence in aggravation or in mitigation introduced before the court. A sentencing argument on behalf of Mr. Thurman for sentence at the mandatory minimum range of imprisonment below the advisory guidelines range was considered by the district court and rejected. That decision is not at issue on appeal. Instead, our point on appeal is that by premising a sentence roughly at the midpoint of the advisory guideline range on an unfounded assumption that the resulting sentence was unreasonable, and that unfounded assumption that the district court identified as significant to its decision within the guidelines range overcomes the rebuttable presumption of reasonableness, which otherwise accrues to a sentence within the advisory range. Because of the lack of evidence before the district court, it's our position that the PSR takes on special significance. And I'd like to briefly recount the most pertinent parts of the PSR as they pertain to this assumption by the district court. And this was an assumption that because Antoine Thurman was not a drug user, that his drug dealings must have been motivated by profit. And certainly,
well, he didn't suggest they were motivated by religious exercise.
No, Your Honor. I was, as his counsel, I was silent on his specific alternatives for why he, what his other motives were.
Well, the quantity was certainly in the record for the district court to look at, and if it wasn't for personal use, and then what would it be for, other than to sell?
Judge Williams, we're not arguing that these were personal use amounts. Mm-hmm. Our argument is that the judge made an unfounded assumption in concluding that the sales were motivated
what's
by personal profit.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for personal use, and if it wasn't religious, and he wasn't doing it to, say, raise funds to commit a terrorist act or something like that, what else was it?
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, I believe there are a number of possible explanations. I think that's the problem here today is we simply don't know. I don't have an answer
for
the court.
What do you mean you simply don't know? Your client knows very well what his motivation was.
He does.
And if he doesn't want to tell us, why is a district judge prohibited from drawing what seems a perfectly natural inference?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree that it was a reasonable inference. The judge's position was
you
you're not
suggested any plausible alternative so far.
I believe one alternative suggested in the briefing, Your Honor, was duress or coercion. And I'm not basing that specifically on communication with my client, but that's certainly a reason why people deal drugs. I'm not saying it's the most common reason. It does happen.
It's not. Well, that might be a ground why your client wasn't guilty, but that's obviously not what's going on here, right?
And
if you have a duress defense, make it. Get an acquittal. I don't see why a district judge can't assume in sentencing that your client actually committed the offense and is legally culpable.
Your Honor, we concede that he committed the offense. We concede.
And that means there was no duress and coercion because otherwise he didn't commit the offense.
No, Your Honor, this circuit has recognized that duress and imperfect duress. duress and coercion can fall short of what's necessary to...
Right, but once the pre-sentence was filed, and also even as late as when the district court made the conclusion on at the sentencing that he was a businessman and he sold drugs solely for profit, if you had something less than what would qualify as a duress defense on the substantive count, that argument was not made,
no,
right?
It was not, Your Honor.
So, I mean, that's a problem for you. You know, because there are just really are not a lot of alternatives. Even if he was holding the drugs for somebody, usually you don't get that quantity of drugs that you're just kind of holding as a favor. It usually is an indication you're in the business in some way.
And Your Honor, there's no doubt that he was in the business. The issue we believe is why he was in the business.
So much for imperfect duress or coercion.
No, Your Honor, because he could be in the business on account of imperfect duress and coercion.
No, you can't. I mean, that we have been very clear that duress may account for a single-time transaction, but as soon as that transaction is over, you have to go to the police and report it. In fact, that's what the Supreme Court held in the Bailey case. So one can't be in a business as a result of duress or coercion.
And
you know, this is getting more and more fantastical.
Well,
I mean, it seems to me, as I remarked in an earlier case today, this is the kind of defense on which a district judge may properly decide to increase a sentence. It's completely frivolous.
Your Honor, I believe that because of Mr. Thurman's right to be sentenced based on reliable information, when the district court picks a sentence, even one within the guidelines...
There is no such right, by the way. The right is a right to a hearing at which good information can be separated from bad information.
Your Honor,
and that hearing was offered to your client.
It was indeed, Your Honor, and Judge Herndon considered what was adduced at the sentencing hearing. But I would rely on this circuit's precedent, United States versus Roach, which was cited in the briefing, that the guidelines do require sentencing based on information which has sufficient indicia of probability.
That's a completely different rule. That's a rule that restricts the use of multiple tiers of hearsay. There's no problem with hearsay in this sentencing, is there?
No, Your Honor. The problem is a binary decision-making in which the district court knows from the PSR that my client's not a drug user, thus concludes he must be motivated by profit.
Well, the problem is just even the language of the indictment, because the language of the indictment says knowingly and intentionally possess with intent to distribute. You know, distribution is equated to, he pled to that.
Yes,
and that language was in each of the three counts he pled to. So I think, you know, it's
Your Honor,
very difficult position you're taking here.
Well, we're certainly not disputing the what. Our issue is with the why, and we believe that it was the subscription to why he did this that renders the sentence unreasonable. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal, please.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Borrow.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Deirdre Derber. I'm an assistant United States attorney from the Southern District of Illinois. At sentencing, the court did it right. They calculated the sentencing guidelines. They calculated them correctly. They looked at the sentencing guidelines in reference to the statute, 18 U.S.C. 3553A, and accordingly issued a sentence. And because the sentencing court did it right, and this court can find, based upon the record, that no error has been made, the United States would ask that you affirm the district court's sentence in this issue, or in this case. I think it also brings to the government to question as to why are we here on a matter like this that could go back, as the court has mentioned, and the court could possibly increase the sentence. But the United States would ask that you affirm the court's sentence based upon the record and based that no error was committed. Does the court have any questions? Thank you.
Well, anything further, Mr. Cronin? Though there's not much to rebut.
No, Your Honor. I would just stand drawing up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.